VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk. Ladies and gentlemen, the land of Israel comes under regular attack. Even the land she possesses is under dispute by some. I mean, there are those who to this day deny the existence of Israel. Some map makers have refused to even label Israel. We have Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, on the day that she was sworn into office, made a change on this map in her office, this little post-it note, the smack right next to Israel with the word Palestine with an arrow pointing to the land. Well, for years, nations like Iran have pledged to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. We have the United Nations has issued more resolutions against Israel than any other nation in the world. Some researchers have indicated that more resolutions have been drafted against Israel than all other nations combined. In December 2018, TRT World reported that Israel became the most condemned nation at the United Nations. Of the 27 UN condemnations, Israel received 21 out of the 27. In 2019, UN Watch reported 18 resolutions against Israel, only 7 against the rest of the world. On July 1st of this year, 2020, just days ago, Day of Rage rallies took place. The Jewish Journal reported in Boston, protesters were chanting anti-Israel, pro-Hamas slogans and calling for the Intifada. There's outrage regarding the very existence of Israel and the land upon which she rests. The Jewish people want it and claim it. The Arabs want it and claim it. They both claim divine legal and historical rights to it. But the question is begged, Israel, whose land is it anyway? Well, joining us in discussion today, we welcome back Chris Katulka, the Assistant Director of North American Ministries with Friends of Israel. He's hosted the radio program, The Friends of Israel Today. He also serves as a speaker, writer, blogger for the Friends of Israel, writes for Israel My Glory magazine. Friends of Israel is a worldwide Christian ministry communicating biblical truth about Israel and the Messiah while fostering solidarity with the Jewish people. Chris, welcome back here to Crosstalk.
Jim, always glad to be with you, my friend.
Today we're going to take a look at the Jewish claims to the land as well as Arabs' claim to the land. But Chris, if we could start out, when did this battle begin over the land of Israel?
I think it actually goes way, way, way back, even into early biblical times. You know, the moment that God promised the land to Abraham in Genesis chapter 12, there begins a tension in the land. And it's something that has been a continual battle that has gone on for millennia. You see it all throughout the scriptures. You see it all throughout history. So this isn't a modern phenomena that the Jewish people are in the land and there's political tension. You know, even the prophet Joel talks about the idea of nations desiring to divide up God's inheritance, God's land. And so this is something that goes back many millennia because it's not just a political issue, it's a spiritual issue, I believe.
Okay, well, we're going to be looking at some of the claims. Matter of fact, your ministry has produced a booklet, Israel, Whose Land Is It Anyway?, which we'll share with our listeners how they can obtain a copy. But I'd like to look in brief at some of the Jewish claims, then some of the Arabs' claims, and beginning with the Jewish claims. Claim number one, Israel has the divine deed to the land. I mean, Chris, that's a pretty significant claim.
Yeah, you know, you actually have to go back to Genesis chapter 15, and it's an amazing moment where Abraham goes by faith into the promised land, and God said to Abraham earlier, three chapters earlier, Abraham, if you leave and you go to the land that I'm going to promise you, I'll give you the land, I'll give you descendants, and I'll give you a blessing. And Abraham, through you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. And Abraham, whoever blesses you will be blessed, and whoever curses you will be blessed. Will be cursed. And so Abraham goes on faith into this land, but Abraham notices something. He says, I'm missing something here. I'm missing descendants. You know, how am I going to continue this inheritance that you've promised me, God, if I don't have a son to pass it down to? And that's when God promises him, moves it from a promise to a covenant. And he actually cuts a covenant with Abraham. He splits animals in half in Genesis chapter 15. And Abraham actually falls asleep, and God, in the presence of a smoking pot and a flaming torch, move through the pieces. And for any modern reader, this is kind of seems awkward, you know, the animal split in half and things moving through it. But this was actually an ancient ritual that was a process of making a deal. And this is the way that people actually would have swapped lands or made promises to one another. They would have split animals in half, and then they would have walked through the pieces together. They would have linked arms and walked through the pieces together. And what they were ultimately saying to each other is, if you don't fulfill your end of the bargain, you'll end up like this animal. And so God actually curses himself in some way. When he walks through those animal pieces alone, Abraham's asleep, and makes a promise to Abraham, he made an eternal promise that's connected to his name. And if he doesn't fulfill this promise, then ultimately God becomes a liar and everything that is written in the scriptures are worthless. And so everything is connected to this promise that God made to Abraham. It's an eternal promise that you can trace from Genesis all the way through Revelation. Now, it's an amazing promise.
Did Abraham have a part in this? Did he have some aspect of responsibility in this?
You know, that's the amazing thing, is that Abraham is merely the beneficiary of the promise. He was asleep, you know, on the side of the animals. God is the one who goes through it. When you go to Hebrews chapter 6, it's interesting, the writer of Hebrews actually says the reason that Abraham didn't go through the pieces, that only God went through, is because God couldn't trust Abraham. And it wasn't just Abraham, it was any man. If any man would have walked through and linked arms with God through those pieces, the covenant would have been broken in a moment, because man is sinful. But see, in this moment when God walks through, God could swear by no name greater than his own name. It has to be his name connected to the promise. It's his name written on the deed. And that's why this land is so vital, because when God promised it to Abraham, Abraham's name isn't on the title deed. God's name is on the title deed, and Abraham is the beneficiary of it. And that's why it's God's promise to the Jewish people. That's why there's Jewish people in the land 4,000 years after this promise was made, because God's eternal name is connected to the deed. And that should give us assurance that what God begins, God will finish.
Okay, I'd like to also have you address if there is some termination point of this agreement, because there are those who claim that Jesus fulfilled that. Jesus is the one who is the true Israel. He's replaced now ethnic Israel. How do you respond to that?
Now, see, I don't think that's the way Jesus looked at the land of Israel. See, I don't think Jesus came to become Israel. Jesus came to be the king of Israel. And God even promised Abraham. There's so many amazing components to this promise. It's the land, it's the descendants, the Jewish people, and it's the blessing, that God would bless the Jewish people, and through the blessing of the Jewish people, God would bring blessings to all the families of the earth. If you look at what the prophets promised leading up to Jesus, it never involved eradicating Israel. It always involved the restoration of Israel for the benefit of all of the nations of the world. And I think of Micah chapter 4, you know, the idea that Jerusalem would become the greatest place ultimately in the world, and that all the nations, not just Jewish people, all the nations would stream to Jerusalem to receive Torah, to receive law, instruction, that the King of Kings would sit in Jerusalem and rule over the nations. Psalm chapter 2, all these amazing prophetic psalms and prophecies that looked forward to a king who would rule from Jerusalem over the nations. It doesn't eliminate Israel, it actually restores Israel. And I think that's why it's important to see Israel in God's place of prophetic prophecy.
And not only are there claims that Jesus is a true Israel, but Chris, as you know, there are those who indicate that the church is Israel. Israel rejected the Messiah. The church has now replaced Israel. Does Scripture support that?
Not Romans chapter 11, Jim, you know, is God through with Israel? This was a major issue, I think, in the early church. Was God through with Israel? Especially when Romans was written, because the Jewish people, both Christian and Jews, who were both of Jewish ethnicity, were kicked out of Rome and then brought back in again. And I think a lot of the early church at that time were wondering, does God still have a plan for Israel and the Jewish people? And it's amazing, because Paul says, is God through with Israel? Have they stumbled stumbled and sinned so much that they have fallen out of his good graces? May it never be. God has a plan and program for his people. And that's why it's important for us as Christians to never be boastful against Israel or the Jewish people, because it's through them that God brought the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. He brought the Messiah, the Word of God, all through the Jewish people. We become beneficiaries as well of what God promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob through Jesus the Messiah.
Chris Kotulik is with us today. He is the Assistant Director of North American Ministries with Friends of Israel. We're discussing Israel. Whose land is it anyway? And Chris, on the same vein, we have those that deny that the national Israel has any future role in God's plan. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Totally disagree, and I'm sure you're not shocked, Jim, but, you know, when God talks about Israel, it's often within light of what's coming. There's an anticipation of Israel's restoration. But I actually want to go to an interesting little passage to highlight, and I encourage your readers to go there. Just read from Acts chapter 1 through Acts chapter 3. And here, the apostles ask a fantastic question to Jesus just before he ascends into heaven. Is now the time, as they're standing on the Mount of Olives, is now the time that you are going to restore the kingdom to Israel? A fantastic question. A question that Calvin, a Reformed theologian, actually said was a stupid question for the apostles to ask. I actually think it was a brilliant question for the apostles to ask, because Jesus had just been preaching about the kingdom for 40 days to them. Surely they thought now was the time for it to come. Well, by Acts chapter 3, Jesus says, now's not the time. It's not going to happen just yet, but you've got a mission to go share the gospel. By Acts chapter 3, Peter is speaking to the Jewish people, and he says, if you just repent and believe to the Jewish people, if you repent and believe that Jesus is the King, the Messiah, the age, the time of restoration, which is the restoration of Israel, the kingdom will come. There is a unique connection between Israel's belief and the coming kingdom of God. So does Israel still have a place in God's kingdom? Certainly the apostles thought so, and so did Peter in Acts chapter 3. The restoration of Israel and the coming kingdom still matter to God in the New Testament, for sure.
We've got a full minute here before our first break here, Chris, and there is another claim that is written in this book, and I'd like you to address, and that's a claim made by the Jewish people that they have a historical tie to the land. Comment on that.
You know, a lot of people think after the Jewish people were banished from the land, especially by 135 AD during what's called the Bar Kokhba Revolt, when the Romans finally got rid of them, that they were gone completely. There's no Jewish people in the land. But that's just not true. Jewish people had holdouts, little areas where pockets where they were living, Jerusalem being one of them, Tzfat, which is an area in Israel, which is another religious location, and Tiberias, where actually what we have is one of the modern Hebrew Bible translations called the Masoretic Text came from. All of that coming from the medieval period, 1000 AD, all the way up into the time of Israel's the earliest movements of the Aliyah, Jewish people were present in the land of Israel. So when we're talking about Jewish claims, historical claims, it's not just going back to the Bible early on or the first century with the apostles or Jesus' presence. We're talking about even through the period where the Jewish people are spread all throughout the world, there were still pockets of Jewish people connected to the land of Israel.
Israel, whose land is it anyway? Further discussion with Chris Kotulik after the break. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY American Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation researcher with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, how primitive was early man?
Chris, early man was never primitive in an evolutionary sense at all. In the beginning, man was created in the image of God with great ability, even able to communicate with God face to face. All this was before sin, however, and we've been deteriorating ever since. Evidence continues to accumulate that long ago man was highly sophisticated, evidently even performing brain surgery. Skulls have been found with holes drilled in them for surgical reasons, and the person had survived. No, Chris, there never were primitive humans. There were some with less technology and not much education, but Stone Age cultures exist today. This is a level of civilization, but not an evolutionary stage, and it's been that way ever since, back in Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America, and to this very day, there's dispute over the land of Israel, and Chris Katulka is with us today discussing it. He's with Friends of Israel, and a little bit later, we'll tell you how you can obtain a copy of this booklet. It's a lot of information, but I can tell by looking at the clock, there's no way we're going to make it through, but we'll cover a lot of material here today to help pique your interest in this topic. Chris, there is not only the claim that there's a historical tie to the land, but Jews also claim that they've had a continuous presence in the land. Have they really?
Yeah, as I was saying before the break, it goes way, not only a biblical presence, Old Testament and New Testament, but there's been a presence even throughout the following two millennia. Now, I'm not saying it was a strong presence. There wasn't millions of Jewish people there, but there were pockets of Jewish people there because they understood something throughout the ages. They understood that Israel was their homeland, a place that God had promised to them. So much so that when they would recite passages in the Passover Seder, when they would complete the Passover Seder, they would say to one another, no matter where they are in the world, they would say, next year in Jerusalem, the anticipation and hope of returning. They even say it during Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, a very important Jewish holiday, connecting the spiritual side as well, not just the historical connection that they've always had a presence throughout the land. But even those who were living in diaspora, spread throughout the world, had a longing to return to their ancestral homeland, which is Israel, and they would say next year in Jerusalem. So yes, they've had a presence there for a very, very, very long time.
Yeah, they claim to have bought the land and settled the land. Did they really?
This is an often issue that's overlooked. Number one, let's just talk about the buying of the land. The Jewish people have been buying the land even in the Bible. Remember, Abraham bought Hebron where he buried his family members. That's where the Machpelah is today, where all the patriarchs and their wives are essentially buried in Israel. That land was bought. Think about David when he purchased the threshing floor in Jerusalem. He purchased it from a Jebusite, Aruna, who he bought that land for a reason. He bought it so that no one could ever claim, you took this from me. Even throughout biblical history, Jewish people were buying the land in order to make major monuments or places of worship where it was important to them. Even leading up to the early moments of the Aliyah, which are when Jewish people were returning to their homeland in the late 1800s and early 1900s, there were movements buying up massive portions of the land of Israel from absentee Arab landowners. These landowners didn't care about the land of Israel. The Arab landowners didn't care about their land that was in Israel at that time. They honestly let it go, so much so that much of the area surrounding the Sea of Galilee and the Jezreel Valley became swamp land, and it was malaria infested. Many Jewish early pioneers that had returned to the land in the late 1800s, early 1900s, actually caught malaria and died trying to turn the land into something. And that's because they purchased the land and they tried to create something from it. And so, yeah, early on, you have major organizations here in the United States that were working to ultimately purchase the land. One of the big ones was the Jewish National Fund. I actually am staring at a little tiny tin box on my bookshelf right now that many Jewish families had and synagogues had, where you would just put your spare change in and send it in, and these are what ultimately helped buy massive portions of land in Israel for the Jewish people.
Wow, amazing. We're going to jump ahead a couple claims here in the booklet here due to time, but there's a claim too that Jews make that Israel obtained international legal recognition. I believe this takes us to the time of the Balfour Declaration, doesn't it?
Yes. Definitely. The Balfour Declaration is one of the most important documents when it comes to modern Israel. Of course, the most important of all of them is Genesis chapter 12, Genesis chapter 15. That's the divine right. But now let's look at the let's look at the political rights. How do we know that the Jewish people, on a political level, on a human level, have a right to that land? Well, you go back to the Balfour Declaration, which was something that comes on the heels of World War One, and we have this moment where the British government, through the Majesty's government, the British government decided that they're going to make it their goal to give the land of Palestine, as they called it, the British Palestine, to the Jewish people. That's who they're going to ultimately turn it over to for their rights. Jewish people had been really looking to many different governments at that time. There was already an organization set in place, the World Zionist Organization, which was headed by Theodor Herzl, a Jewish man, to reestablish the Jewish people. He approached the Germans before World War One. He approached the Ottoman Empire before World War One to see if there was any way that the Jewish people could return to their ancient homeland. And they denied them the right, but that really singed in the minds of many world leaders. They started to work their way into world politics, and by the end of World War One, you have the Balfour Declaration and then another one called the San Remo Agreement, when the world finally decides that the Jewish people have a right to return and establish themselves in their ancient homeland. The San Remo Agreement comes in 1923 or so, of April of 1923, the world agrees that the Jewish people deserve their own homeland.
And there's also another claim that Israel captured land in defensive wars. And I know the Six-Day War falls under this claim because we so often will hear, well, Israel needs to go back to its pre-67 borders. So let's talk about the defensive wars claim.
Yeah, this is a difficult one because, you know, in any other circumstance, they might have a say in the UN and the higher courts and the international courts, for occupation. But the problem is that the land that Israel has was not occupied territory. Specifically, the biggest claim today is the West Bank. Israel returned the Sinai Peninsula, which they took in 1967. They returned that in the late 70s, early 80s for peace, which they promised. They returned the Gaza Strip in 2005 under Ariel Sharon. It didn't really work out the way they were hoping to. They never got peace from it. We still hear about the troubles and turmoil that come from the returning of the Gaza Strip to the giving it to the Palestinians. And then they've kept massive portions of the Golan Heights up in the north and the West Bank. In told, the total amount of land that Israel returned since the Six-Day War that they captured is 94%. So if you think about it, they've returned 94% of the land that was captured from the Six-Day War back over to the people that they took it from. The big issue is the West Bank. And really, the hard part about the West Bank is that land was actually occupied by Jordan between 1948 and 1967. That land wasn't Jordanian land. That land, according to the partition plan of the resolution made by the UN, resolution 181, was a promise to the Palestinians to establish a state. Well, the Jordanians took it, and they occupied it. And so nobody occupied that land. Nobody had rights over that land. There was no sovereign state in the West Bank. So when Israel captured it during the Six-Day War, there's nobody that can return it back to. That's why it's not occupied land. It's disputed land. There's no Palestinian nation. There was even no technically Palestinian people group for them to return the land to. It's disputed land, and a lot of international scholars, one Canadian one in particular, he believes that because of the San Remo Agreement, the original document, all of that land technically belongs to the Jewish people because that was the promise that the world made to them. So there's a lot of issues going back and forth, but ultimately, the thing that you want to look at is that there was no sovereign Palestinian state that the Israelis took it from. So you can't say that it's occupied territory when they're not occupying anybody's land. That's the big issue.
Chris Katulka with us here today on Crosstalk Israel. Whose land is it anyway? We're going to be taking a look at some Arab claims as well. But before we do that, Chris, I know that, again, I look at the clock. There's no way we're going to be covering all that you have in this booklet, Israel, Whose Land Is It Anyway? But I believe you've got this available through Friends of Israel.
Yeah, you know, when we're talking here, we're just glancing over a lot of the information, much detailed information in our book, Israel, Whose Land Is It Anyway? And if your callers or if your listeners call the Friends of Israel right now for a donation of any amount, we are happy to give you this book, Israel, Whose Land Is It Anyway? And I'll tell you, with the annexation coming up in Israel, mm-hmm. When it comes to defending whether or not you support Israel, the Jewish people, this is a great book to have. When it comes to standing up and defending Israel and the Jewish people. So if your listeners call, they get, with a donation of any amount, they'll get the book mailed to them.
And how do they contact you?
Yeah, they can call our headquarters, the Friends of Israel headquarters, at 1-800-257-7843. That's 1-800-257-7843. If you can't get to it today, you can call back in the future during regular business hours, but we're happy to give you this book for any amount, any donation amount.
Okay, I'd like to also mention one other matter, and that is when you were with us a couple months ago, you had offered a complimentary subscription to Israel My Glory magazine. It's a magazine you publish. Can listeners who missed that opportunity back in May when you were on with us, can they connect with you now and take advantage of that as well?
Yes, if you have never subscribed to Israel My Glory or received the year free subscription, you can go, again, call the same number, 800-257-7843, and you can sign up and get a year free. That's just 6 issues of our award-winning Christian magazine, Israel My Glory. Our current issue is Jesus is Coming Again, But When? It's a look at why the King must come before the kingdom. It's a really great magazine if you're interested in what's going on in the Middle East, what's going on in the church, and how Israel plays a central role to all of those things. And so you can get a year free subscription just by calling and signing up.
Okay, again, folks, that number is 800-257-7843. And again, the subscription to Israel My Glory, a 1-year subscription free to first time individuals contacting them for this. And if you'd like the booklet here, Israel, Whose Land Is It Anyway? They're making that available for donation of any amount at 800-257-7843. Chris, I'd like to look at some of the Arab claims to the land, and one of them is, some of these are like mirrors of what Israel's claims are, and one of these is because Allah said so. It's our land because Allah said so. Your response?
Yeah, really, the difficulty with the Arab claim to the land is that it ultimately comes back on whose version of the Bible do you connect to, or the holy, whatever holy scriptures you hold value to. So if you believe that the Old Testament and New Testament matter, our Bible, the Christian Bible, the Hebrew Bible, then God gave that land to Israel and the Jewish people. But see, the Quran is the one that ultimately says, no, that's not right. The ownership of ultimately much of the Middle East belongs to Islam. And so part of the issue is that they retell the story. And it's really nice of them to do that, because they actually wrote their book 600 years after the New Testament was written, give or take a few years. So you have a document that was ultimately written by somebody 600 years after the New Testament was written. And you have to remember, Muhammad was a tradesman, so he's moving in and through the entire Middle East. He's moving and seeing and interacting with Christians and with Jewish people and with pagans. So when he's moving in and through the world at that time, he's taking bits and pieces of everything, and he's ultimately rewriting the story for his own benefit. You know, for me, I look at that as I always like to say, Satan isn't the creator. He's created, so he doesn't have the same creative abilities that God has. He only mimics what God can do. So the stories and accounts of the Old Testament and New Testament mixed with paganism are what you see in the Quran. And so, of course, the stories get skewed. And that becomes important in understanding how we understand Israel and the Jewish people and whose land it is.
We've got to take a break. Back in a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
This month marks the 200th anniversary of the birth of Robert Sheffy. Sheffy, an itinerant circuit-riding preacher, committed to proclaiming the gospel to the mountain folk in the eastern U.S. To mark this milestone, Unusual Films is releasing a restored, high-definition edition of the powerful film, Sheffy. And this month, VCY is making it available to a whole new generation.
This offer includes both Blu-ray and DVD, and even a digital download. Also included the public showing rights, enabling the church and schools that own a copy to show it publicly. This month only, VCY is offering one combo pack for a donation of $15 and additional packs for a donation of just $10 more. You can also obtain 10 sets for a donation of just $75. Call 1-800-729-9829. This offer ends July 31st. 1-800-729-9829.
Israel, whose land is it anyway? Well, that's our topic today with Chris Katolka, who is Assistant Director of North American Ministries with Friends of Israel and also host of the radio program Friends of Israel Today. It's a program that airs on the VCY American Network every Saturday morning, also speaks and writes for Israel My Glory. If you missed their contact information, be listening, have paper handy, a sheet of paper, a pen, or a pencil. We'll be giving that information here again as well. We're talking about some of the various claims to the land, claims made by the Jewish people, claims made by Arabs. And Chris, another claim that's made by Arabs is that, hey, we are the descendants of Ishmael, who was the son of Abraham. And matter of fact, you talked about this earlier, that Abraham bought Hebron, and they're claiming Abraham was their father. So are they not entitled to the land?
Well, this is, it all depends again on which angle that you take. You know, if you are a Muslim and the Quran is your text, then of course you're going to lean in the way that the Quran says. You know, of course Ishmael is the one. They're deceived because their text, again, I like to argue, was written 600 years after even the New Testament was written. So we're talking almost 2,600 years after the time of Abraham. So, you know, the actual events are best documented. We, you know, the Dead Sea Scrolls are some of the earliest documents, Hebrew documents that we have. In the Dead Sea Scrolls, there was no Quran around at all. And what do we have? We have Abraham giving his inheritance over to his son Isaac, the promised one. So, again, I think it's really important to understand how the text works there. But the more difficult issue is it's not just the land that's connected. A lot of Muslims, they believe that the third most holy site that they have is Jerusalem, because Muhammad ascended from essentially where the Temple Mount is to receive the Quran. But the hard part is that Jerusalem's never even mentioned there. So you have some serious discrepancies even in the Quran and how they understand their ownership to the land, or how they think they have some identity to it. And so I think our better text, of course, as a Christian, is to rely on the Holy Word of God, to fall back on that, and to even see it from a historical perspective. Isaac was the one who God made the promise to that was handed down from his father, Abraham.
Abraham to Isaac to Jacob. Chris, Arabs also claim that they have a legal promise to the land, and they base that legal promise coming from Great Britain. What's that all about?
Yeah, it's difficult because there was actually some misunderstanding of the terms. They were claiming a text and a promise from a politician at that time, and that politician was making a promise, but that politician was thinking of a pan-Arab world where the Jewish people would still have a right to their ancient homeland. When he was thinking about what would happen after World War I, you have to understand the Ottoman Empire completely broke apart, and there were many people vying for leadership at that time, and they were looking at a pan-Arab world that would come from this, but that didn't eliminate the fact that the British, especially this particular British diplomat and politician, that there would be a place for Israel within this pan-Arab world, a place for the Jewish people to return to. He still fell back on what was known as the Balfour Declaration. So they like to skew the text and the understanding there, even though it was one particular man.
One of the claims that we discussed earlier from Israel is that they had continuous presence in the land, but that's also a claim coming from Arabs. They say, us too, we've got ancient and continuous presence in the land. Is that true?
You know, this is something where they like to argue we are connected to the ancient Canaanites. That's actually one of the arguments they try to say, is that we're connected from before even the Israelites arrived on the scene with Joshua. And so, you know, we were there long before. But, you know, the problem is that the likelihood of them being Canaanites is incredibly small. So the question is, who are the Palestinians? You know, a lot of the Palestinians, and it's not a bad thing at all, but a lot of them, after the first Aliyah happened and the Jewish people were returning to their homeland, and they were turning those swamp-infested areas into farmland that could be worked, you know, the moment job opportunities popped up in that area, people from all over the Middle East started flocking toward Israel for work. And so there are scholars that say many of the Palestinians that are there, you know, they're not descendants of the Canaanites from that land. In fact, they come from all over the Middle East at that time, the modern Middle East, coming up from Egypt and Lebanon and Syria and Jordan into these areas because they were looking for work. And once they settled in that land, they become a part of that land. And so, you know, that's where a lot of scholars actually believe the Palestinians come from. They are not a part or connected to some ancient Semitic group that go back to the Canaanites. The Canaanites were run off. There are no more Canaanites. There are no more Jebusites or Hittites. They're gone. And so the idea of them being a part of that is very, very unlikely.
So we all have the likes of Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib that refers to this as Palestine, I mean, with that posted on her map. And so that's where she's taken this from?
Yeah, well, you know, for them, the idea of when you say Palestine, what you're also ultimately trying to say is exactly what the Romans were trying to say. That is a word that is linked to one of Israel's enemies, the Philistines from the Bible. The Romans put that there after 135 AD when they ran the Jewish people out. And pushed them out. They turned the land that was known as Judea at that time, which was associated with the Jewish people, into Philistinia or Palestinia, and they changed the name of Jerusalem into Aelia Capitolina and made it a very Roman pagan place to be, ultimately to keep the Jewish people out. That was the idea, to change the identity. So, you know, for Rashida Tlaib, what she's ultimately saying is we want to change the identity of the land. Palestinians don't technically want, not all of them, I'm talking about the leadership. They don't want peace with Israel. They don't want an Israel at all. That's what they do. They want Israel to disappear. And so they've had plenty of opportunities for peace, which I'm sure we're going to talk about later on.
Right.
But no, they don't want peace. This is something that does go back into early time period. But the idea of Palestine ultimately is the idea of replacing Israel. That's what they ultimately want.
Let's quickly hit the annexation issue. It has been a great controversy. Some have thought, hey, this was supposed to have happened already. Tell us about the controversy right now over annexation of Samaria, et cetera.
Yeah, so Judea, Samaria, also known as the West Bank, major portions of this could ultimately be turned over to the military and control and the ultimate sovereignty of Israel. It will no longer just be disputed territory. It would be sovereign Israeli territory. Much of that being major areas, major cities, five particular cities that are in the West Bank that have a large Jewish population in them. They will be adopted into the Israeli state, and it will no longer be disputed territory. And then also the big one is the Jordan Valley that runs along the border with Jordan. This will be a big one as well. This doesn't eliminate the Palestinian territories at all. In fact, it probably will solidify them even more because of Israel annexing the land there. But I do think it's important to know that this is something that Israel does, I believe, have the right to do based on international law, because it's not occupied territory, it's disputed territory. They have the right to make it their land for their security. That goes to Resolution 242, which is all about the security of Israel. So they have the right to be able to take that land to defend themselves against potential enemies. So that is something that the Netanyahu government is, I believe, really trying to get done before his term is up in the next few years.
I'd like to open our phone lines. Our number here to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. If you have a question or a brief comment, 800-733-9829. As you're calling, Chris, let's talk about peace. We have the Trump peace plan that's been proposed. We've seen a lot of bristling against this, not by Israel, but by groups that do not really want to see peace come forth from Palestinians, etc. Will we see peace in the Middle East?
You know, this, the big issue, I think Trump really put the onus on the Palestinians to come to the table. The thing that Trump did was he really set up the layout for his peace plan early on. When he moved the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, he was saying that Israel has a right to be in Jerusalem. Jerusalem is their capital. It's not going anywhere. Making the Golan Heights, claiming the sovereignty of Israel in the Golan Heights, that was a big issue. That means Golan Heights are not going anywhere. They're not going to concede it to the Syrians. These major peace plans, major moments in you know, Trump's administration for Israel, ultimately paved the way for the peace plan. That we're not going to be carving out Jerusalem and dividing things up and getting emotional about Jerusalem. We're going to look at this from a prosperity perspective, and we're going to look at it because, you know, Trump is going to say we want a Palestinian state. It doesn't eliminate a two-state solution. It actually promoted one. But what I really think that Trump was doing was getting rid of all the pie-in-the-sky ideas for the Palestinians and ultimately bringing them to the table to have real discussion about real issues, and they just can't seem to get there. You know, there's a saying that really goes deep in Israel. An Israeli politician said it: Palestinians never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. And that's exactly what's going on and over again when it comes to peace.
We're going to go to phone lines, and our lines are packed here at VCY. And let me just mention again, if you'd like to obtain the booklet, and we've covered some of the points in it, but there's so much more in the book, Israel, Whose Land Is It Anyway? It's available through Friends of Israel. They're making available a donation of any amount, but you need to call them at 800-257-7843. Also, if you're not a subscriber to Israel My Glory, you've never taken advantage of their free one-year subscription, that's available as well by calling that number, 800-257-7843. They have a conference coming up. We'll discuss that in the next section. Let's get to Don in Pensacola, Florida. You're on the air.
Yes, as I was studying the Bible Believers Commentary series this morning, I got a blessing and I wanted to pass it on to you. It's Numbers 24:17 supports Israel's right to the land. I quote, "I shall see him, but not now. I shall behold him, but not nigh." There's... Hello?
You're on the air, Don. Please go ahead.
I'm sorry, Jim. It says, "There shall come a star." It's capitalized there. Out of Jacob, that indicates that it's the person of the Messiah himself. Then it says, "And a scepter," that's a king or kingdom, kingship, "shall rise out of Israel." It's Numbers 24:17. Mm-hmm. It says Jacob there. It says Israel there. It doesn't say Ishmael. And it was a blessing to me. I just wanted to pass it on to you.
Okay, thank you, Chris.
Yeah, I think, number one, Pensacola, near and dear to my heart. It's where my in-laws live, and so praise God for that. And I agree with you. I was just doing my devotions in Numbers not too long ago. And you know what I kept thinking about when I was reading through this Balaam-Balak interaction is that Israel is being blessed because God said earlier on in Genesis chapter 12, "I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you." And that's what this whole thing is about in Numbers chapter 22 through 24. Balak wants Balaam to ultimately get rid of Israel. He's a bane in their existence. He knows their trouble. That's the way he looks at them. And Balaam gets up to curse them, and he just can't do it because God has blessed them. And the best part about this is that there they are in the valley being looked down upon, and they are wandering in the wilderness. They're just in the wilderness, probably wondering, what are they doing there? You know, wanting to get to the promised land. They've been upset the whole time. And there is God in the middle of it all, blessing them and giving them a future hope that one day the ruler from Jacob would come and be the one who would establish himself in Jerusalem. What a great picture.
Don, thank you for the call. We'll take a quick break and back to more phone calls here on Crosstalk. Back in a minute here on the VCY American Network.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewreport.com. Well, for several years, we've been warning about the rise of anti-Semitism. And a few weeks ago on my radio broadcast, I warned that the street riots and the Black Lives Matter riots would eventually turn toward anti-Semitism. And indeed, they have. In fact, there's video now of pro-Palestinian Black Lives Matter rallies in the U.S. calling for death to Israel and death to America. So how did we know this was coming? Because Black Lives Matter, an official organization backed by three founders who have communist roots and one of them mentored by a Weather Underground individual, have openly joined BDS, Boycott, Divestment, Sanction. It's really anti-Semitism against Israel. It's really the repeat of Kristallnacht, the night of the broken glass that kicked off the Holocaust by calling for boycotting Jewish businesses. So it's not hard to realize that the Marxist and the Islamist and the Red-Green Axis are united through Black Lives Matter.
Just a reminder to take advantage of the booklet, Whose Land Is It Anyway? That's Israel. Whose Land Is It Anyway? You can call 800-257-7843. They have that available for donation of any amount, as well as a free subscription to their magazine. Very quickly, Chris, in as fast terms you can, you've got an online conference coming up called Anchored, Hope Secured in Turbulent Times.
That's right. We want to encourage your listeners to go to FOI.org, FOIs and Friends of Israel, FOI.org, and then they can register for our online conference. It really looks at, in the midst of all that's going on with coronavirus, what's going on economically around the world with all the nations, you know, we are anchored as Christians in Christ, and that should give us hope with no matter what comes. And so I encourage you to go sign up and register at FOI.org.
Again, that stands for Friends of Israel, FOI.org. Thomas in Madisonville, Tennessee, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Jim and Chris. The last few years, there's been a lot of attention given to a movement to try to keep people from buying products from Israel.
Yes.
And I was wondering, my family would love to buy products from Israel, and how would I go about finding what products are made, type of industries and things that are made in Israel?
Good question. Chris?
Yeah, this is a great question. Well, number one, I hope that you come to one of our future prophecy conferences, because we actually invite Israeli vendors to come and share, sell their Israeli products, because we believe at the Friends of Israel, one of the greatest ways to support Israel is not only to pray for them, to share the love of the Messiah with them, but also to buy stuff from them. Go to Israel. Be connected to them. You can find stuff online. There are Israeli companies that sell products in the United States. If you live in toward a bigger city, a lot of your grocery stores will actually sell Israeli products a lot of the time in a kosher section. So I encourage you to go online and just look up purchasing Israeli products. Go buy yourself a SodaStream. SodaStream is a very popular product that you can buy right in your Bed Bath & Beyond or wherever online on Amazon. That's an Israeli product. Buy your computers, Intel products, whatever it is. Look up what products come from Israel. I promise you, it will surprise you how many products and inventions come out of there.
Indeed. Thank you, Thomas. David in Milwaukee, you're on the air.
Thank you, Jim, and for taking my call. Jesus is the Jewish, but then Messiah in the genealogy. He's called the son of Jacob, and we know he's the son of David. He's the root and offspring of David. He's called the son of Abraham. Mm-hmm. And I looked in the concordance as my brother passed this year and I was staying home. The word Israel is over 2,500 times in the Bible. I think only God and Lord is more.
Wow. Interesting thought there, Chris.
Yeah, you know, I don't even think you need me to come on the program, Jim. That was enough right there to argue the point that God is not through with Israel, that he's called Israel for a purpose, that the Jewish Messiah came through Israel, and that is the book, the Bible that we read as Christians, as non-Jews, is a Jewish book through and through. We have been blessed by the Jewish people.
Thank you, David. Pensacola, Florida, another caller. Julie, you're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to know that when President Trump announced that Jerusalem would be the capital of Israel, what significance can this have, can this event have for Israel, and will it hold true for Israel and have a lasting effect for their good?
Yeah, this is a great question. And first of all, Jerusalem was already the capital of Israel. What President Trump did by moving the embassy was recognize Jerusalem as the capital, as the leader of the free world. That's what he did. As the president of the United States, he said, Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. I'm not going to play the politics about it anymore. We're not going to look at all the different angles. Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. It's been that way for thousands of years. And so ultimately, what Trump did was establish that fact. What does this mean for Israel? It means that the largest, most powerful country in the world that I believe has been blessed by God, the United States of America, has Israel's back and is showing that Jerusalem is the capital. And there have been countries as a result that have followed and also looked to move their embassies to Jerusalem. So it was more the desire to show the world, hey, you know, as the United States, we believe Jerusalem is the capital. What that means for the prophetic future, I don't know. But what it means for politics today is that the United States believes Jerusalem is the capital of Israel.
Thank you, Julie. Terry in Danville, Kentucky, you're on the air. Hello, Terry. You're on the air. Terry, please go ahead. We're short on time.
Quick. John McTiernan, as America has done to Israel, if you would comment on that. And the other thing I say, comment on this false doctrine of replacement theology. Thank him for being influential.
Okay. Thank you. Any comment there, Chris, in brief?
Can you just say the first one, what America's done for Israel is helped establish the state of Israel. God used America to be one of the movements to help Israel become a nation again. You can thank President Harry Truman for that. All of his advisors said, no, thank you. It's a bad idea to recognize Israel as a state. But he went against their wishes anyway and supported the newfound state of Israel in 1948, and we've been supporting them ever since in many different ways. So I think we have a lot to thank America for when it comes to Israel, and we should keep that support. Remember, I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. And so I think that's really important to understand.
And the other issue there with the replacement theology is referred to, that was discussed earlier in the program. We're going to squeeze one last call in. Jerry in Watertown, South Dakota, you're on the air.
Hi. My question is, how
Jerry,
can you reconcile...
Jerry, turn your radio down, please, because of the feedback.
What was that?
Okay, I asked you to turn your radio down, please. We're less than a minute. Go ahead.
Yeah. How can you reconcile with the reality that the things you say about people who are gay or transgender causes people to kill themselves?
Well, we didn't talk about that issue at all today, so that is nothing with our discussion. Chris Katulka with us here today from Friends of Israel. Their number to receive the booklet available for donation of any amount, Israel, Whose Land Is It Anyway? Their number, 800-257-7843. That's 800-257-7843 for the book. They can get the complimentary subscription to Israel My Glory, and to find out more about the upcoming online conference, foi.org. Chris, 30 seconds. What do you want to leave with the listeners?
Yeah, I really hope that people, especially with your last listener, understand that Israel is something that God has promised, but also they're the most democratic, they are the only democracy in the Middle East, giving hope to many different people in a world that suppresses people. So Israel, I believe, is a hope in the Middle East, and ultimately we have to look forward to the hope of the King of Kings returning, and I think it's a great hope that we have.
And Chris, thank you so much. I wish we had another hour here, but time has run its course. Thank you for carving out the time to join our listeners today on this important topic. Thank you, Chris.
And thank you.
And again, folks, you can contact the Friends of Israel, 800-257-7843. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.